This is Cruise Radio.
Cruise Radio is brought to you in part by TripInsurance.com. Travel insurance done right by the people who know travel insurance. Get a quote today at TripInsurance.com.
Broadcasting from the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida, this is Cruise Radio. Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thanks for checking out this episode of Cruise Radio. Very happy to have you here. Coming up on this week's show, it's going to be a very detailed review of Carnival Panorama. My buddy TJ just got off of a 7-night cruise, and then I was on for the 3-night before him. So we're going to kind of compare notes and talk about Carnival Panorama and what you can expect if you're sailing on the ship. If you're looking for cruise news this week, you're going to have to wait until Cruise Radio Rewind this weekend because it was just hard to nail down Sherry with it being Christmas week. But if you need your cruise news fix, we have you covered with Cruise Radio News. Find it where you listen to your favorite podcast. Just search Cruise Radio News. All right, let's jump to PJ and his 7-night Mexican Riviera sailing aboard Carnival Panorama. Hey, PJ.
Hey, Doug, how you doing?
Good, man. It's a shame we didn't get to meet up. You actually watched us dock on coming home from the 3-night cruise. You were on the back of the Queen Mary, and then I had to get to the airport to fly out to Utah, so I missed you. But I'm excited to talk to you about this cruise because I kind of want to get your thoughts, and then maybe I'll give a couple thoughts if that's okay with you, and we might go back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds great. Let's do it.
So as we always do, we'll kick off with pre-cruise thoughts. So what were your pre-cruise thoughts of Panorama?
Yeah, well, my brother and sister-in-law contacted me back in June and saying they want to do a cruise with us. And so I started looking for the December time frame because that's when it worked for work schedules. And I happened to actually come across the fact that this was the first cruise ever. So I presented this with a list of other possible sailings to my brother and his wife and my wife. And this is the one we landed on. We liked the excitement of being on a brand new ship and trying things out for the very first time and kind of a unique once-in-a-lifetime experience for us. So that's kind of where we came up with this cruise.
Now, you were out in Texas. You had to make your way to Long Beach. As I just mentioned, you were on the Queen Mary. A brief overview of that experience.
That was really cool. That's something I really wanted to do. And it's, with it being so proximal to the cruise terminal, it's kind of a no-brainer. I've always been fascinated by the seafaring history and the history of the Queen Mary and what it went through and just the logistics of the technology at the time and how they just were able to do what they did without all the modern GPS and radars and everything else. And it takes you back to a different time, really. So I really made a solid pitch for that for my wife and I and our girls to stay there. We did that. We came in, flew in that morning before the cruise. We rented a car from LAX and drove around, did some sightseeing. Then we went to the Queen Mary and checked in. They were doing their Queen Mary Christmas celebration outside, which was kind of a fun little Christmassy event with some kids' activities and lights and a train ride and fake snow and all the good stuff. So that was a lot of fun as well. You know, definitely from a different time, but they've updated some things like the electrics and had plenty of outlets in the room and near the bed and everything else for charging devices or breathing machines, whatever you might need. Pretty good food on board in the restaurants and great service all around.
Did you walk to the Long Beach Cruise Terminal from the Queen Mary?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And what would you say about a 5-minute walk?
If that. I mean, yeah. It was actually made longer because they had that Christmas event set up. So right. It kind of blocked off a lot of the most direct route. So we actually had to walk around that through the little village and then into the cruise terminal. So really is maybe a 7-minute walk from the Queen Mary to the cruise terminal.
How was the embarkation for you at the Long Beach cruise terminal?
So it mixed a little bit. Our arrival appointment wasn't until 1 o'clock, but we showed up early around 11. And my brother and his family had driven in from Phoenix the night before and stayed elsewhere. And then they just met us at the terminal. And so we got to the terminal, we breezed right through security. That was no problem at all. But between the fact that this was the very first turnaround day for the ship, and it's a ship twice the size that the terminal's used to dealing with, and the fact there were over 500 back-to-back cruisers, there was a lot of waiting around in the terminal. As it was, though, we actually boarded the ship around 1:10 or 1:15. So had we actually stuck to our suggested arrival time, we probably wouldn't have waited very much at all. So I can't really be mad about that. But yeah, it was a little bit longer embarkation process than I'm used to.
You know, it's funny you say that because when I was on MSC Maravia, I had a 1:30 embarkation appointment time. And so I got there at 12 thinking I'll get on the ship earlier. If I would have arrived at 1:30, I would have legitimately walked right on the ship.
Right. So you were on the 3-day, Doug. What? How was the embarkation for you without anybody getting off the ship?
Yeah, so for me, it was really simple. We were at the Hotel Maya. So it's Carnival Panorama, Queen Mary, and then Hotel Maya all along the waterfront right there. It's about a 10-minute walk from Hotel Maya. It's a little under a mile to get there. But we did because we had luggage and everything, and we just got an Uber and Ubered over. It was like a 5-minute Uber drive. But once we got inside the terminal, it was probably a good 15 to 20 minutes. We were there just early enough, though, to get like pretty much right when they opened the doors, we were on the ship. And it doesn't hurt being, you know, having priority with the cruise line either, being Platinum.
I'm red on Carnival, so I'm just Joe Schmo Cruiser, and so there was no that's the other factor that's with this, too, is that I believe there were a really high number of Diamond and Platinums on board with this being the inaugural sailing.
Yeah, for sure. So you make your way on board Carnival Panorama. What were your first impressions of the ship?
This ship is just beautiful. It's a little different there coming on Long Beach because the gangway takes you on to Deck 4 right outside the casino, which is different than most ships, which take you right into the main atrium. I think it's because you typically deal with the imagination and inspiration where the main atrium's on 8 or 9. And that's where the gangway takes you to on those ships. But it's a little bit different thing. People are guiding you and shepherding you directly to the buffet. And so they want you to walk aft along the lower concourse there and then to the elevators and head up to the buffet. I kind of bucked that trend and went to the right through the casino and went straight to guest services to get my Dr. Seuss breakfast reservation. So that worked out well for me. But the ship first impressions, had that new ship smell. The casino did not stink of cigarette smoke that much yet. They had that new Heroes tribute bar right outside the casino, which was one of the first things you walk through when you get on board. And that's just a really cool thing that they've done for veterans.
Did you notice the fake wood flooring? It's a different, it's a departure from the other ships that Carnival has.
Yeah, I definitely noticed the wood inlays on the floor as well, and I thought that was a really classy design choice. Overall, I'd say that this ship, I never sailed the other two Vista class ships. My latest one is on the Breeze, which is one of the first ships after Joe Farkas retired, and they seem to be becoming more and more muted with their interior design work as I've noticed since he left. So this is not like Vegas-y or you know, Carnival-ish, if you'll forgive the term at all. It was much more just kind of classy and refined and much more muted, I'd say. One thing I noticed that was kind of weird is that, I mean, as you're walking along that lower concourse there behind aft of the Heroes Bar and the Comedy Club, there's a lot of empty slat wall right there. And I get the impression that that is supposed to be an art gallery, an art auction, but they just don't have that on board yet.
Yeah, that on the deck plans, it says that is the art gallery, but same for us. We didn't have it on our cruise either. So yeah, that's probably waiting for the artwork to arrive maybe, or who really knows. So you make your way to your stateroom. What kind of stateroom did you book and what did you think of it?
We did a standard balcony stateroom and it was on deck 8 midship. So it was a great location. You know, quick, easy. You walk up or down the stairs to different venues. And that's one thing I try to do is not use the elevators at all and just to do stairs to stave off those guys' burger calories. Stateroom itself, I think, was a little bit tight. As on these bigger ships, they just try to make the stateroom smaller to pack more on there. And it, because of that, it kind of lacks storage a little bit. We were set up for 4 people with my wife and 2 daughters and I. A couple things I want to note about it, there's no divider curtain in there like there are on some other ships. So there's no privacy curtain between the bunk area for the kids and the double bed for the parents. So we couldn't necessarily, you know, keep a light on and read while the girls went to bed or anything like that. That said, the bed was really, really comfy, and the TV was really nice. It was a nice big flat panel TV that was interactive. Lots of good channels for kids and for grown-ups. We don't have cable at home, so it's nice to watch some HGTV and Food Network while we're in the room. I also will notice that, in general, the staff seem to be spread pretty thin, and that seems to be more and more the trend with Carnival these days. And the steward was really nice. He worked really, really hard. I think he just had too many rooms he was trying to deal with because it took him a long time to come bring down the lower bunk and get the couple things that we asked for. And in fact, I had asked for some distilled water for my breathing machine, and he deferred me off to room service instead of handling himself, which is what I've had done in other places.
Question, because you wanted that divider curtain, did you price the Family Harbor staterooms at all?
We did not, because we wanted to stay up on a higher deck instead of going lower. Down on Deck 2.
I don't have any kids or anything, so this was the first time I actually had a chance to check out the Family Harbor staterooms. And with the two bathrooms and then divider curtain, that is like the perfect family room. I'll give Carnival that.
Oh, that would be something definitely to look forward to if I do sail the Vista out of Galveston or something like that sometime.
Yeah, it was a very familiar look to me. You know, you had the USB ports, the TV, all that. That's really basic. And Carnival, of course, this is the very last Carnival ship they're making that's going to have the plastic shower curtains. Moving forward, they're going to glass. So a lot of people are going to happy about that. But there were two of us in the room. We had the two twin beds and a couch. Adequate, and it was it was your typical. If you've sailed Carnival before, the room is going to be very familiar to you. And if you've sailed Carnival's Vista class before, it's like walking into any other Vista class ship.
I did record a quick room tour, and so I'll definitely send you the link to after I post it up on YouTube. One last thing I'll mention too is that there are no plugs next to the bed. And so we actually had to run the cord from my machine across the room to the desk to plug it in. So that was a little disappointing for a brand new ship to come out with no plugs next to the bed.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. Let's talk about food on this 7-night sailing. We'll start in the main dining room. What time dining did you have and what did you think of it?
Well, by the time we booked in June, all the slots for the traditional dining have been snapped up. So we had anytime dining. And that's one thing I found interesting is that the smaller midship dining room is one they use for the traditional. And then the large two-story aft dining room is anytime. So I could definitely see the trend of more and more people wanting to go anytime and them responding to that. So we did anytime dining. That worked out pretty well. One thing I loved is that instead of having to wait in that line to reserve your table or request a table, that you can now just go right on the app and say request table, and it'll tell you exactly how long you have to wait. And then it will let you specify who's going to be dining with you, and then we'll send them alerts through the app as well. And then when your table is ready, it'll alert you, and it'll give you the exact floor and table number that you're at. And just show up, show the maitre d' your phone, and they take you right to your table, which is great.
And that is one thing on our sailing. A lot of people didn't realize they could do that, and it was really clogging up Deck 5, where the check-in desk is there by the Java Blue Cafe for the anytime dining. People didn't realize, hey, you can check it on the app. But I think once people got used to it, it kind of lessened the congestion on Deck 5.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was the first 2 days were like that on our ship and on our sailing. And then I noticed the crowd thinned out quite a bit after that. But yeah, I kind of happened upon that right away and got lucky and did that. In general, the food in the main dining room was okay. I don't think it was anything to write home about, but it was still decent. Good selections. The Carnival chocolate melting cake is always a favorite. Someone once told me to try it with a little side of peanut butter, and that'll change your life, Doug. If you've never done that, you got to go for that next time around. Service was slow, but I'll chalk that up to, A, it's a new ship and a new team working together, and they're just trying to get everything to gel, get their processes in place, figure out where everything is. The service, when the waiters came to us, we seemed kind of rushed to order. And then once we ordered, it took a long time for the food to come out.
What time did you typically roll into the main dining room?
It really varied. So typically, you know, the first night, I think we did it around 6 o'clock or so. Then one night we were a little bit later, around 7:30 or 8. Another night we were at 5:30. So just whenever we got hungry and worked around our evening activities. We only actually ate in the main dining room 3 of the nights, which actually is one thing I kind of liked about the anytime dining, is that it felt like it kind of freed us up to do more of the other options around the ship. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the past with traditional dining, you feel kind of, you know, not necessarily obligated, but like your waitstaff gets to know you, which I love, and I miss that about the anytime dining. But at the same time, though, the trade-off was that we were able to go try some different things.
Did you eat at any specialty restaurants?
Yeah, we did. My wife and I and my brother and his wife did the Carnival Kitchen one night, and that's the new instructional space on board. It's a demonstration and instructional kitchen where everybody's got stations, you're paired up in twos. Basically, you walk in, all the ingredients are prepped for you, and then they walk you through basically cooking the recipe. So I've heard you kind of describe it jokingly before as cooking your own, paying to cook your own food. But I'm one who enjoys doing cooking classes on land. I used to teach cooking classes on land at one point. And so it was a real treat to be able to kind of have that experience and learn some new skills and learn some new cuisines that I can then take home and incorporate into my own menu planning.
I thought a couple of items were going to be gimmicky on this ship, and the Carnival Kitchen was going to be one of them. But after doing it and baking an apple pie, yeah, it sounds silly, but it was really cool, man, with the tablets there where every workstation is interactive. You have the chef there. You have the chef's assistant making sure you're cooking it right. And that was a really good experience. And it was fun, too. Like, you know, getting your hands dirty, you know, legit making an apple pie and doing the apples and everything from scratch. It was taking the class changed my mind.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. We did the Latin fusion class, and it was one of those dinner classes. So you basically make it and eat it right there. Mm-hmm. And we did like four or five different courses, anything from cheese empanadas to ceviche to arroz con pollo and the tortilla soup. So we were using lots of different gadgets. We were deep frying stuff at our station. We were it's just really cool to make all these different things and experiment with some flavors that we're not used to cooking with. And then one thing that is good for those like myself who don't usually get the drink package is if you do one of the dinner classes, when you're sitting there eating dinner, they're coming and pouring wine for you, you know, included in the price of the class.
This is kind of like the chef's table a little bit. Did you do that by chance?
Yeah, you actually just hit the nail on the head there. We did do the chef's table one night as well. And that's kind of a tradition for my wife and I when we cruise. So we've done chef's table on Carnival and Royal. And the chef's table is something the Carnival does really, really well. I love on this class of ship how they have a dedicated room for it now right off the galley. We did it on the Freedom where it was in the library right outside the main dining room. And then we did it on the Breeze, which was basically at a folding table in the galley. So we were very immersed in everything, but it was also very noisy and tough to kind of have a conversation in that one. So this was a great balance of the two. They did a brand new menu that's just now being rolled out. This is the first ship to have this new chef's table menu, and everything was phenomenal. We had a couple of nice live prepared amuse-bouche appetizers when we first got into the galley. And then we went into the special room and had a nice seated five or six course dinner with everything from sea bass to steak to you know, some duck. It was everything in between. It was delicious. A great, great foodie experience if anybody's interested in that.
Yeah, and it's a great space too, sitting right there in the kitchen where you get to basically see where the chefs are preparing thousands of meals like right in front of you, and they're walking by with the servers are back there picking up the food. It's a really cool. And did you guys get a kitchen tour beforehand?
We basically sat down, we did one or two courses and then stopped. We did a little tour, which wasn't as much of a tour as I've had on the previous two experiences. We walked through the kitchen past the main hotline and then over to the pastry area where we got to, you know, one person got to participate and the rest of us got to watch a demonstration of how to make the melting chocolate cake. Mm-hmm. And which is typical for what we've done in the past. But, you know, on the Freedom, we got to go through and see like all the different areas of the kitchen. So we got to see the cold prep, the hot prep, the soup area where these giant 60-gallon cauldrons where they make soups and stocks for the ship. We got to actually see the chefs and wave back and forth to them on the hotline. This one, I think we were between dinings or after the second dining had done for the midship dining room. And so we were on the hotline on that side. So we didn't really see much activity there like I have in times past.
Very cool. Anything else like as far as Steakhouse or Gigi's or Cucina?
No. So that was kind of it. Steakhouse, we'd done on the Breeze and it was really good, but we decided to do the Carnival Kitchen this time instead. We did do Cucina for lunch one day for the pasta bar, and that was delicious. I like how they do that now. There's a wait, but they give you a pager, and basically they'll page you when your table's ready, and you walk up and fill out your sheet, and then they bring you do some delicious pasta. That was really great. I did the Guy's Barbecue for lunch one day. You know, being from Texas, there's, you know, we are up to our ears in delicious barbecue, and I'd say this is pretty darn good. A nice variety of brisket and pulled pork and sausage and chicken. Right down the place, some really good sides as well. And then we did do the buffet one night. The buffet was pretty disappointing overall. The quality I don't think the quality was there. The food felt like it was sitting there in the warming bins before it was put out there for a little too long. And then while there's plenty of buffet lines, and that really helped out with the flow of the buffet, there was not much variety. It was the same five or six dishes at every point in the buffet. That said, though, the deli that's in there was really good. I got a couple sandwiches there. And then the desserts were pretty good. They have some new desserts they rolled out on this ship. But overall, the buffet was kind of a disappointment.
So for me, I did the main dining room the first night. It was a little bit slow. I gave them a pass because it was the very first dinner that that main dining room had with the dining team and all that together. And I know they pull people from different ships, and it's a matter of clicking and working with each other. The second night, I went to Fahrenheit 555 Steakhouse. That's the $38 surcharge steakhouse. I had the petite steak, the filet, and the lobster tail solid, and that was quicker. And then Gigi's Asian Kitchen for the last night, because my cruise was only three nights, and that was $15 a person. Had like the Kung Pao chicken and the pork, the glazed pork belly. So good. If you're into the Asian fusion thing, definitely make sure you stop by, because you get a free lunch there, like a Mongolian wok type lunch during the day. It's just opposite of Kuchina for the captain's pasta bar. And then at nighttime, it's $15 surcharge for a lot of food, and it's family style as well. So you can kind of pick this, pick that, and get to have a little sampling of a lot of the items on the menu.
That's great. I love Asian cuisine. So we didn't do it this time around because I live in an area with a lot of really great Asian cuisine. But yeah, I'll definitely, if I'm on this class of ship again, I'll definitely make a point to try to visit that too.
Let's talk about the entertainment on your seven-night cruise.
I got to tell you, the entertainment was truly great overall. We'll start out with the main theater entertainment. I only saw one of the shows because just the way the timing worked out. And I came on before, and I was lamenting with you about the disappointment I had with the main theater entertainment on the Breeze, where the Playlist Productions, where there are fake playing instruments. Mm-hmm. The show I saw was the Celestial Strings show on this ship. These are three brand new shows. One's a rock and roll. I forget what the second one is, but then there's the Celestial Strings as well. And I got to tell you, Doug, that they had the electric violin trio in there playing with the cast, and the talent level was, I don't know if it's just because they're trying to make a big splash with this new ship, but it was a really, really high talent level. They sounded fantastic. They were playing all kinds of great pop songs. There was no plot to it. It was just a musical review, which probably aided in how much I enjoyed it, because their plots are usually pretty lame. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of cool. The visual effects, the lighting, the costumes, and the singing and the violin music were just outstanding. I have no complaints about that. Only complaint is I got there a little bit late and had to kind of stand for most of the show in the back there, but that's my own doing. As far as roving musical entertainment, that was amazing as well. I'm drawn more to the guy with the guitar type of acts, because I do play some gigs here on where I live, and the guitarist they had there named Owen Stephen, he was really great, taking lots of requests, very personable. He and I kind of chatted up throughout the week. But what really blew my mind, Doug, was this duo in Pig and Anchor named Liz and Lucas.
Yep.
First of all, Liz has got an amazing, beautiful voice. They're playing all kinds of great pop and country songs, and some original works of their own too. And she's just knocking out the vocals. But then her partner, Lucas, also has a great singing voice, an excellent guitarist. But what blew my mind is he's also playing a foot-operated drum kit while he's playing guitar and singing. Also, he's got two pickups on his guitar, so one of them actually drops the input by an octave, and so it makes it like a bass guitar. So the guy is playing bass guitar, acoustic guitar, drums, and vocals all at the same time. And then he's also got a looping pedal in there, so he basically will record a loop of the rhythm and then start soloing on top of that while still playing the drums. My jaw was just on the floor. I went and saw them about every night I could. They were just amazing.
I was really attached to the violinist playing in the main atrium. I
mean, they were great too, yes.
Yeah, playing the rock and roll. It was almost a little bit of, they had some Christmas music, like it was a little Trans-Siberian Orchestra style up there. I thought that was really cool. With the production shows, they didn't do Celestial Strings on our sailing. They did Broadway Nights and Rock Revolution.
That was the other one, Broadway Nights.
Yeah, I kind of geeked out with the Rock Revolution because they had drones in there, like 50 of them that were flying around.
I'm sad I missed that.
One wrong move, it's like those drones could go rogue. I don't know, there's probably safety features, but I'm like, wow, there's drones everywhere. And they were also really playing the drums, electric and bass guitar in there all throughout the show, which I really appreciated. Broadway Nights, I appreciate Broadway, but I'm not like a huge Broadway fan, so I could take it or leave it. But I think one that stuck out to me was the Rock Revolution.
I noticed that on the Rock Revolution night, the house band was doing an acoustic set. And it was just like the female lead vocalist and a guitarist. And so I think it's because the rest of the band was in there playing with the cast for the Rock Revolution show. But I did hear them play on a different night, and the house band was great. The brass trio was really cool. I listened to them a little bit in the atrium. And then lastly, I did poke my head into the Havana bar for a little bit one night, and the Latin band was that back there. They had the place hopping. The people were out there dancing like crazy. Lots of good people watching there for the, if you like the salsa music and salsa dancing. It's really great.
Did you do the comedy show at all?
I did not. I'm not a big, you know, stand-up comedy person on cruise ships, and so I did not get to see that. My wife and my brother and sister-in-law did go see one, and they thought it was pretty funny and really enjoyed it. I'm not sure which one they saw, though.
All right, let's talk about the ports of call on this 7-day cruise. And my port was Ensenada, and Panorama will never go there again, so we'll just kind of skip it. There was really not much to do there. So give us the port of call and a highlight from each port.
First port was Cabo. And we're big fans of Cruise Tips TV and Sherry and her family. And one of the things that she recommends to do is take a water taxi to Medano Beach. And that's what we did. So we found a water taxi. We were able to negotiate a decent price for us. And then we all got on board and we went out to the keyhole in Lover's Beach and got to see, you know, sea lions and fish and through the glass bottom. And then we went to Medano Beach and Billigan's restaurant, and we just kind of camped out at a table there for the afternoon. Kids got to go play in the water and on the beach. We buried the cousins on the beach there. And then we just got great pictures of the head sticking out of the sand. Had some great food and drink there. So I definitely recommend that. The guy, we arranged a time for him to come pick us up. And he's, you know, there was no worry about him not coming, because as he put it himself, he goes, if I don't come pick you up, I don't get a tip. So he was there early, before our scheduled time. So we were great getting back to the ship and no problem there with the tender operation. So that worked out really well. We were the only ship in port on each of our ports, which really made the experience much better too. That was Cabo. And Mazatlan, my younger daughter and I stayed on the ship and just enjoyed the empty features where we, you know, did water slides, and she's 4. So we did the water slides. We did the arcade for a while. And then I put her in the kids club, and I enjoyed the thermal suite in the spa by myself a little bit. So that was a good day. My wife and older daughter went and did a zip line excursion through the cruise line, and had a fantastic time. They had these giant runs across ravines and through the trees. My wife was wearing my GoPro, so she got some great footage. And it was my 6-year-old's first time to do anything like that, and she was just so great and fearless doing it all. So that was a lot of fun for them. I will say Mazatlan is an industrial port that you dock at, and so when you get off the ship, they have little shuttles that'll take you to outside the port area. And then from there, you're kind of on your own. There's nothing right by the port. So you kind of have to take a taxi or do a ship-sponsored excursion to get anywhere in Mazatlan. In Puerto Vallarta, the intent was to do a hop-on, hop-off tour bus. And we went both my girls decided they want to stay on the ship that day. So for the first time ever, my wife and I left them in the kids' club, and we went off on our own. We went with another couple that we met on board. And then we tried to find the hop-on, hop-off bus. We couldn't find where to board that, but we ended up running into a tour operator and booking a private driver for the day. So he took us to a taco place, or Pepe's Tacos, where we had some delicious tacos there as a snack, and then some street tacos at some stands down the street there. So that was a really great experience, some true Mexican street tacos. And then he took us to the Don Chendo tequila factory, where we got a great tour and learn how tequila is made. We learn how tequila is drank, and we practice that a lot. And then end up coming home with a few bottles. So that was really great. But with the kids club, you do have to be back on board by 5 o'clock to that's ship time to retrieve your children. So because they do close for the dinner hour. And so we told our driver that, and it was no problem getting us back in time there. So that worked out great. I will say, though, that time zones, you start out the ship trip on Pacific time. And then Cabo, at this time of year and in December, is 1 hour ahead of Pacific time. And so the ship stayed on Pacific time in the port in Cabo, and we didn't change time until we left Cabo that night. So in Mazatlan, we were on the correct time zone with shore. And then in Puerto Vallarta is on central time this time of year. And so we were an hour behind Puerto Vallarta. So you got to be really mindful of your ship time versus your port time when you're walking around. And then after we had a sea day, and then between the 2 sea days coming back, we switched back to Pacific time on the ship. So definitely playing time zone roulette throughout the whole trip.
So in Puerto Vallarta or Cabo, were those tender ports?
Cabo was a tender port.
Okay.
Puerto Vallarta and Mazatlan were both dock ports.
Okay.
And the cruise ship pier in Puerto Vallarta is right in the middle of the main drag through town. It's really easy to get places from there. There's a big galleria and casino across the street. And then you can easily grab it. There's plenty of taxis right there by the port you can grab, or private drivers if you want. So lots of great options there in Puerto Vallarta.
Before we get to the debarkation, I want to touch on a couple of things. The newly added Sky Zone space. Did the kids partake?
The Sky Zone was definitely a highlight. So what you do with Sky Zone is it is a four-fee additional activity. And so there are some tablets right outside the Sky Zone area on deck 7 forward. And you walk up to those tablets, you reserve a time slot, and then you pay for it right there and sign the waiver. Mm-hmm. And so my brother and sister-in-law were able to reserve for their kids and for our kids. And what's great about it, Doug, is they separate by age groups. So they have a set time for 0 to 5 year olds, and then from 6 to 14, and then 15 and up and up. So that way you don't have to worry about my 4-year-old being bowled over by a 17-year-old, you know? And that made me feel a lot better. And they really, really loved it. My daughters both kind of enjoy rock climbing walls. Mm-hmm. And the rock wall they have there is interactive in that they have like a video game projection on the wall where they have this little bat flying around that you just kind of climb across the wall and slap the bat to get it and then move somewhere else. And you just kind of chase it around. And both my daughter and my niece loved doing that. They have the whole kind of air bag area where you have the balance beam with the jousting sticks, and then they have tug of war in that area, and then they have that ladder that will flip over on you, which mm-hmm. I think you have some experience with. And then they have the actual trampoline bounce area with the basketball hoops, and then they stop the basketball and they play dodgeball at a certain point. So for the different age groups, they do alter the activities that make it age appropriate, and they alter the music to make it age appropriate as well. So I thought they handled that really, really well. What was your experience there, Doug?
Yeah, we had a super fun time, as you mentioned, with the ladder. I couldn't quite negotiate the ladder to get to the very top and do the high five thing. I kept falling. It's not too stable, and even trying to counterbalance, it just didn't work out too well. But we did the open jump, and that was $12 for adults for an hour. And that was so fun because we got to do the tug of war, and then we got to slam dunk a basketball, probably the only time I'll ever slam dunk a ball in my whole life. We did jousting, was super fun. The rock climbing wall, our projection was the bouncy ball game. So you had to keep hitting the ball so it didn't go into
the old pong game on Atari.
Yeah, that's it. We did that. And then we also did the glow party. That was $18, but they give you shirts to wear, and you're actually playing dodgeball under a black light and getting to do this a lot of the same things as the open jump, but add the black light in dodgeball experience. That was really fun. It's probably one of the highlights. Like, if you have kids and you want to wear them out, take them there for an hour and they'll sleep like a baby. Actually, if you have an adult kid as well, like myself, that was probably the most I worked out all cruise.
I will say that afterwards, my daughters did not argue about taking a nap that afternoon. They definitely wore out during that time. I actually was able to poke my head in for part of it. My wife stayed for most of it. I did mm-hmm. the brewery tour while my younger daughter was doing the jump, and that was really fun to pick an anchor. And so you got to meet with the brewmaster. It was $24.95. With that, they give you a sampler flight paddle with the sampler glasses. Mm-hmm. But the way they handled the samples was he basically set down a pitcher of beer for every two tables, and you could pour yourself samples. And the way he put it was, I can't put it back in the tanks. So yeah. If some people didn't drink their share, then you can definitely help yourself around some more. So I did my best to not give them a full pitcher back. And then we got to hear about the brewing process, how it differs on a ship versus how it is on land. Then we walked over to the brew house area where they have those big copper and glass kettles where they walk through how they do the mashing in of the grains and the water and then the boil and adding the hops and then chilling it down and adding the yeast and then pumping it back over to the fermenting room where they have all the conical fermenters and then the serving tanks. So it was really neat to do that. And then with that, you got a souvenir pint glass, and then you got a certificate indicating you've gone through the tour, and you can bring that certificate back at a later time for a free pint of beer. For $24.95, you got a pretty decent amount of beer, a souvenir glass, and a great, you know, educational experience as well. So that was a great value.
Colin is really good. I love Colin because he's like, pretty much drink the pitchers dry because I can't take them back, like you said. He's a good teacher, too. He really breaks it down. I don't know a lot about beer, but after taking his class, I learned a lot about the beer brewing, and especially the challenges they have at sea with the yeast and the hops and everything. You don't think about that, right? Like when you're
Thinking about supply chain logistics are just a whole new dimension on there too. Plus the fact that they have to use steam to heat the kettles to boil and everything too is a different type of dynamic to it as well. But I did find Colin to be a great speaker, a great teacher. I've done a number of brewery tours. I'm kind of a big beer nerd here in the Houston area, so I've done a number of tours around here. I've homebrewed in the past, so like it's cool to see another professional go through the process and. Mm-hmm. It gave me some pause when he told me they were looking to hire a couple more brewers for the different ships.
Now, as far as crowds and congestion throughout the ship, how was your experience?
I gotta say, the ship has enough to do on it that it really spreads people out. So I didn't notice, even on the warm days, I didn't think it was, I saw plenty of available lounge chairs. I didn't really notice very, very much chair hogging. We did have some cooler sea days too, so that might have been part of it too. But even on the warm day, I don't think it was that bad. The lines at the Skyride and Sky Course got to be a little lengthy at times, but that wasn't too bad. But overall, I think that it never really felt like there was 4,000 people on this ship. I mean, it was they really spread us out pretty well, and there was not much wait anywhere, as far as I could tell. I didn't really do the casino on the sea days when it was in full operation. The smoke smell got pretty good, got pretty bad in there. So, I'm pretty sensitive to that. So I stayed away. I'm not that big of a gambler as it is. I do love how on this class of ship, they do tuck the casino down on deck 4 on the lower promenade instead of being up on the main promenade. So you can enjoy all the activities on the main promenade without smelling cigarette smoke, which was great as well. A lot of great entertainment team activities, the trivia contest, the name that tune. I will say, though, that in general, there was a big lack of hot tubs on this class of ship. I don't know if it's true on the Horizon or Vista as well, but I remember being on the Breeze, which is a dream class ship. They had the 4 hot tubs down on the outdoor promenade on deck 5, and they had 2 by the main pool on the Lido deck and 2 by the aft pool, and then a couple up in the Serenity. And on this ship, there's only 2 hot tubs for the general public at all ages to use. There's 1 or 2 up in Serenity. There's a couple back in Havana for those guests. And then there's 1 in the thermal suite. But on the main decks, there's only 2 hot tubs on the entire ship that we could find.
Yeah, there's 2 by the Tides Bar at the aft pool. And then there's 2 up in Serenity. Then if you have the thermal suite pass, you can use that one. And, of course, you have the 2 down there in Havana if you're staying in a Havana suite.
Yeah, so on the sea days, my girls have essentially 0 body fat, so swimming in cold swimming pools, they don't last very long. So they do enjoy kind of splashing around the hot tub a little bit. And on the sea days, there was a good 15 or 20 people in each hot tub. So that was not really easy for them to do that in. So that was a bit of a disappointment, especially when coming from the Breeze where there was hot tubs everywhere. But, I mean, the thermal spa was great. I definitely enjoyed it. That's one thing Carnival does really well. I've done the thermal suite on Royal and on Disney, and it doesn't hold a candle. This is something the Carnival does best. The Camp Ocean program, my kids really enjoyed that. They are open and for free for most of the day from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. They close for an hour. Then if you wanted to, you can drop your kids off with the Camp Ocean staff in the buffet at 6 o'clock. They'll feed your kids and take them back upstairs till 10 o'clock at no charge. And then after that, it's an hourly rate until 1 a.m. for the Night Owls program. When the Camp Ocean is closed, however, they do have two outdoor playgrounds on Deck 11, which they open the gates to. So you can actually go and access those when the Camp Ocean is closed. So you can go play and get the kids get some energy out as well. So that was really great too. I mentioned earlier the Skyride and ropes course. So my wife and brother and sister-in-law got to enjoy the Skyride. Unfortunately, I'm a gentleman of size, and so I was unable to enjoy the Skyride. There is a 250-pound max weight limit on that, which I think just came down from 300 because of the issues they were having on the other 2 ships.
Yeah, it did.
The minimum height for that is 52 inches. So if kids want to do it, my niece was able to do it, but she was the only kid that was able to do it in our party. The ropes course, the minimum height is 48 inches. That one's got a max weight of 275 pounds. So a little bit higher than the Sky Ride, but still not high enough for my sizable mass, unfortunately. But, and then the Sky Zone, the trampoline park did have a weight limit too. I believe it was 265. Is that right, Doug?
When I was in there, the sign said 300 for Sky Zone, but they could have changed it since then. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see the policy on that one too, but I'm a little bit on the plus side of 300. So I was limited on that side. And then it was a little disappointing, but hey, it's something I did to myself, so I can't be mad at them for it. It's all in the name of safety. Yeah.
So how was your disembarkation?
Yeah. So about that, it was, so again, this is the second time they've ever actually done a full turnaround. This is at a cruise terminal, which is handling a ship twice the size that they're normally used to handling. So with those being said, plus we are on a cruise with an abnormally high number of diamond and platinum guests. So we got out of our room by 8 a.m. or 8:30 a.m. We did they had them assist with our luggage. So we turned in our bags the night before, and that went great. We had zone 16 on our luggage tags. So they started with all the diamond platinum people. Then they did the self-assist, starting with the lowest decks and moving up. But I think people just were impatient and did a mad rush on the gangway. And so it really delayed the process. There's about an hour between announcements for the next group to come out. That said, though, we were able to go to deck five and sit outside on the outside promenade and some nice comfy chairs. My kids were able to run around and get some energy out without bothering anybody. So that worked out well. And we were back in the U.S., so my wife and I could start getting a jump on emails from work while we're sitting there on our phones. We actually got off the ship at 10:54. And then when we got off the ship, we went right – our bags were right there. We grabbed them and very short wait in customs. So I think we were shipped to curb in about 15 minutes, if not less. From there, we had a little bit of snafu. My intent was to go rent a vehicle from one of the downtown Long Beach locations and then spend the day walking around or driving around L.A. and doing some different activities. But when I got to the rental car agency, they informed me that they did not have the car seats that I had reserved, which with a six-year-old and four-year-old was a bit of a challenge. So I'll spare the details on the podcast, but I was not pleased with the way that Hertz handled that, and I had to figure out some alternatives to get us away from the port and to LAX airport.
So I'm looking at my Uber receipt right now from that day. So I was in the platinum line at 7 o'clock, 7:30 off the ship, and at 7:47, I was in an Uber to LAX. It was a $38 fare, and it took a little less than 48 minutes from Long Beach to LAX.
That's not bad at all. Yeah, I remember texting you from the Queen Mary, and you said you're already at the airport. And that was around 8:30 or 9 o'clock. So I was pretty impressed by that.
Yeah, when you texted me, I was in the Admiral's Club working and about to board a flight to Salt Lake City.
I will say my brother self assisted, and I think they were one of the ones that kind of mad rushed the gangway out of turn. But they were they left their room around 8, and they texted us that they were in their car and on the road by 8:45.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're doing self-assist, then it's a pretty quick and easy process. It was quick and easy once they called us for the baggage assist. But I mean, just know you're going to get comfortable. And honestly, our flight wasn't until after 5 o'clock. So we were not in any rush at all to get off the ship and get to the airport.
Yeah, I should also mention I did self-assist as well. So I was, you know, they did make us line up, and it was like they walked us from the Vista dining room down the promenade on deck 4, past the punch liner, through the Heroes Bar, through the casino, and then just out there along the main atrium was where the door was on the starboard side, and we just kind of debarked that way. And not a long line for customs either. We probably waited about maybe 10 minutes in the customs line. He just glanced at our passport, said, did you bring anything back with you? We said no, and then he's like, all right, have a good day.
Even with declaring 4 bottles of tequila and having an actual declaration form with us, mm-hmm. it was still a matter of, all right, welcome back, have a good day.
Yeah.
That was pretty easy. They did open up a second door to go out, the one over by that we came in on by the Heroes Tribute Bar. Mm-hmm. So when we started the mass debarkations, then you could either go forward or aft down to deck 4 to go out by the atrium or by the Heroes Bar. Yeah. However, both of those lines did converge on the actual gangway itself, which still worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
I do want to mention, you've said the Vista Dining Room a couple times. I thought that was a really, really cool nod to the other ships in this class. So the aft dining room is called the Vista Dining Room, and the midship dining room is called the Horizon Dining Room. So I thought that was a really clever kind of nod to the other ships there, and a good way to kind of close out the series for this class of ship.
And, you know, one thing I did notice, too, in the Vista dining room, you haven't sailed the Vista class before, but there was on deck three down there a bar in a big, long, high-top table that you could sit and have dinner at. They took that out on this ship, and they actually put in more tables there. And also in the midship dining room, which is the Horizon dining room, they took out that big, long, or the big, round 12, 13-seat captain's table right behind the podium there where the hostess is, and they put more tables there as well. But that big captain's table reappeared in the back dining room. So they did, I guess, you know, this ship does have, I think, 25 more staterooms than the previous ship, because IMAX was three decks and the Sky Zone Bounce Park is only two decks. So they were able to add 14 more staterooms in the space where the IMAX was. So I can see where they had to add more tables in the main dining rooms to accommodate.
Yeah, I saw, actually, I'll give you a quick little plug for your stuff. You had a really great article this morning on your cruiseradio.com website about those changes going deck by deck and noting those changes. So between Horizon and Panorama. So I thought that was very informative and gives me a much better feel for what I'll be walking into if I get on Vista or Horizon. Oh, that was a great article. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. So looking back, what was the biggest highlight of this cruise for you?
Watching Liz and Lucas and the entertainers, those were some of the most lasting memories I'll have. And Owen Stephen as well. And I've connected with them on social media now, and I'll be trying to follow them in the future. I know Liz and Lucas are going to be on Sunrise sometime soon, and who knows after that. But that was a big highlight for me. The Carnival Kitchen and the Chef's Table were both major highlights. And just it being at sea, that's really my happy place, is being at sea there. But I really liked the overall feel of the ship. I thought it was very, very well put together, very elegant. And I think the staff, while spread thin in the dining room and the housekeeping staff, they were still very friendly and willing to help out and worked very hard to please you. So those were some of the big highlights for me, I think.
Final thoughts of Carnival Panorama.
Like I said, it's a great ship. There's tons of activities. If you're bored on that ship, it's your own fault, really. There's so much to do between what the entertainment staff is doing for you. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention, too, is we did the Seuss breakfast one morning, and that was a lot of fun as well. And they did a great job with that, with the different colored foods and the different little colored tablecloths and everything as well. So that's a great theming and a great thing if you have kids. Definitely try to come go to guest services as soon as you board, to book that when you get on board. That is $5 per person for adults or children, and a great time. Other final thoughts, though, I think that the stage shows are drastically improved over past Carnival ships. So if you are one that traditionally avoids the stage productions because they're just frustrating you, then I think that you should give this a try on the Panorama. And the issues I think we experience will only get better with time as the ship and the crew kind of gels and learns to work more as a team. When you go into an inaugural sailing, you've got to take it with a grain of salt and know that not everything's going to be absolutely perfect. And so if you walk in there with that expectation, you're going to have an excellent cruise. I can't recommend this enough, and I think that people in California Long Beach are in for a real treat going forward with Panorama.
Well, PJ, thank you so much for coming on. Also, if you're looking for more information about Carnival Panorama, there is so much information on the website, cruiseradio.net. I'll also put some links in the show notes, like a comprehensive deck-by-deck walkthrough video of the ship. Also, our trip reports from our sailing, and some reviews like Carnival's new culinary concept, Carnival Kitchen, and their new tribute bar, the military theme bar on deck 4. All of that can be found at cruiseradio.net or the Cruise Radio YouTube channel. You can also see photos in our Facebook group. Just search Cruise Radio News. Thanks again, buddy. Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you too.
A big question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer. If you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at TripInsurance.com. Not only does TripInsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, TripInsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out TripInsurance.com.
When is your next cruise? Where are you going? And what are you going to do once you get there? Market-leading specialist CruisingExcursions.com offers savings up to 60% off shore excursions versus cruise line prices. Whether it's private, shared, scenic, historic, or family tours, CruisingExcursions.com has up to 12,000 excursions in over 700 ports worldwide. You can even bundle your excursions for more savings. Make your next vacation affordable and unforgettable by visiting cruisingexcursions.com.
All right, Dougie, here we go for the new Cruise Radio stuff here for you. Cruise Radio is produced weekly in Jacksonville, Florida. For partnership opportunities, email Doug at cruiseradio.net. Hear Cruise Radio on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, the Stitcher Radio Network, Google Play, or at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.